And now, a warrior for the Word of God and the Constitution of the United States, a Marine Corps veteran, a Harvard-trained attorney, Bishop of the Call Churches, and founder and president of STAND. Staying true to America's national destiny, the voice of the awakening, your host, Bishop E.W. Jackson.
And I am he. Great to be with you again. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope all of you fathers out there had a wonderful Father's Day. I had a tremendous weekend. My wife's birthday was on Friday, Father's Day on Sunday, and so we always get to we get to do two things at the same time, basically, and we had a wonderful time. Had my daughter up visiting with us, and on Friday, you all heard my son on the air with me, so it was a wonderful weekend. I hope you enjoyed it, too. You know, in the midst of all the stuff that's going on, remember, we have so much to be grateful for, so much to be thankful for. In fact, I don't know whether you all caught this, but Herschel Walker, a former NFL player, I mean, I didn't know this guy had it together, but he really did my heart good because I don't know whether he's serious about this, and it doesn't really matter because it's exactly what needs to be said. But he basically said, look, for all those people who want to live in a place where there are no police, he said he will happily pay their way to a country of their choosing, which where there are no police. Now, the thing is, I don't think he's going to find any place like that. In fact, what people are likely to find is police states where they better not step out of line for fear not only of having their freedom of speech curtailed, but being killed in the process. So I don't think that anybody is particularly interested in taking him up on the offer, although they talk like they are. But Herschel Walker said he would happily pay their way. And then his son, who I don't know his son, but his son had some great things to say as well. And let's see. Oh, yeah, here we go. He said, his son said, my dad grew up in the Deep South as a poor black man and turned himself into a notable athlete, businessman, and person. No, I don't feel bad for, quote, oppressed people, close quote, who run around burning buildings down. I'm not sorry. I'm grateful for my country, the opportunities it's given me. God bless him. God bless Herschel Walker. And God bless his son. His son's name is Christian. And I have a feeling that explains it, probably coming from a biblical worldview rather than this crazy secular worldview that we are experiencing right now. So at any rate, there's two people right there who appreciate the blessing of being Americans and living here. They both happen to be Americans of African descent, but that doesn't matter because they're Americans and they appreciate the blessing of calling themselves Americans, living in this nation of tremendous opportunity and hope and ability to fulfill one's God-given potential. So there's plenty to celebrate. Don't let anybody take that away from you. Don't let anybody steal your joy, okay? You keep your joy and you keep your positive and uplifting attitude and spirit, and you just go on about doing the things that you know you're supposed to do in life. Now, we've got to keep one eye on the ball here. We've got to watch the direction in which our country is going and be willing to stand up for the principles we believe, because if we don't do that, we may look up one day and not be in a position to experience the joy that this nation has to offer us because people have taken away our freedom, offering to give us something much, much better. That's probably what they're thinking in the autonomous zone in Seattle, Washington. Oh, we're going to offer something much, much better. But as you can see, things are degenerating into violence. And when they do, they call 911 and the police can't get there. One person's already dead. Several have been wounded. But you know what puzzles me about this? And I've been racking my brain trying to figure this one out. I thought this was going to be the summer of love. Doesn't that sound great? Yes, it's the summer of love. Right here in the middle of Seattle, Washington. And it was going to, it's like a block party. It's like a festival. Don't get distracted by the fact that a few people get killed or shot or injured and the police can't get to them. Don't let little things like that get in the way of the wonderful event that's happening there. Oh, brother. I don't know how people... You've got to be too dumb to come out of the rain to buy into that. I'm serious. I mean, and the thing is, what's happening right now with the disorder and the chaos that's starting to go on, and these vigilantes trying to control things. I knew all of that was going to happen, didn't you? Are you kidding me? Nobody thought this was a block party except this idiot mayor. Nobody thought this was a festival. Nobody thought this was going to be a summer of love who's got half a brain. You knew the thing was going to degenerate into chaos because it's born of that. It's born of lawlessness. It's born of chaos. So of course that's what it's going to degenerate into. And you know what? If they don't clean that mess up and break it up, it's going to get much, much worse. I guarantee it's going to get much, much worse. And by the way, while we're hearing calls for dismantling and defunding and doing away with police departments, which is what Herschel Walker was responding to, while we're hearing all that, the level of violence breaking out in inner cities across this country has been staggering. Absolutely staggering. When we come back after the break, I want to play you a clip that sets up what's been happening in Chicago. And then I want to talk to you about that and then begin to take your calls, because this is something I have been saying again and again and again. And let me say it without equivocation, without apology, without any sense of trepidation whatsoever. I denounce Black Lives Matter. I denounce it. I denounce it as a Marxist, socialist, communist, cultish mess that is doing nothing but misleading people and extorting money from corporations and others and propping up a bunch of far left extremists in politics who want to take this country away from its constitutional foundations and its Judeo-Christian principles into a totalitarian state. And this thing out there in Seattle is exactly proof positive of that, because that's what they're trying to establish, a little totalitarian state within the city of Chicago. You know, this is not America any longer. Controlled by thugs who walk around with guns and deny the police access to people whose lives need to be saved after they have become the victims of violence within that abomination. I denounce Black Lives Matter. It is an abomination. And any Christian who's stupid enough to follow that needs to go back to the Bible. You ought to know better. There's nothing godly about that thing. It's an ungodly construct. It is destructive of this country, because what we ought to be doing is coming together around trying to save all innocent American lives. That includes these kids that are dying in the inner city. It includes those babies that are being aborted. It includes these people who are dying of fentanyl overdoses being brought into this country by China. All this scourge of death, this cult of death, needs to be dealt with. Back in a moment.
This is Viewpoints with Kirby Anderson.
A new documentary reminds us how intrusive social media can be in our lives and how personal privacy is quickly vanishing. Kyle Smith writes about this in a recent op-ed and mentions the documentary The Creepy Line. The name of the documentary is taken from a comment by Google CEO Eric Schmidt. He has a nickname for the invasive nature of his company. He says Google policy on a lot of things is to get right up to the creepy line and not cross it. In the film, Peter Schweizer illustrates how your search history gives Google an enormous amount of information. Of course, this is supposed to tell Google and other advertisers what you like to buy. But this enormous cache of information also tells anyone who has access to all of it all sorts of things about you and your personal taste. Google also has noticed that you would leave the search engine in order to surf the internet, so it developed the browser Chrome. That means that everything you do online through Chrome is also collected in this cache of information at Google. But that's not enough. Google wants to know what you're doing even when you're not online. So there's Android that uploads a complete picture of what you have been doing when you're not online. Smith concludes it's a surveillance business model. Google Maps, Google Docs, Gmail. Google knows more about you than your spouse does. Over the last few months, Congress has shown some interest in understanding how Google and other big tech firms make their editorial decisions, but Smith also reminds us that the federal government is a heavy user of Google products and has shown little interest in oversight. If Google isn't going to self-police itself, and if Congress isn't going to take any meaningful action, then we as consumers need to be wary of how Google and others use us and our information. I'm Kirby Anderson, and that's my point of view.
Take Kirby and the Point of View team with you on the go with the Point of View app. Search for Point of View Radio at the Apple or Google Play stores.
A moment of truth with Gary Bryden of the Association of Independent Methodists.
Out of 328 million people in the United States, 2.4 million will die each year, which averages out to about 7,400 people per day. That's a death rate of about 0.7% each year. So far, 2% of that 0.7% has been from COVID-19. We're halfway through the year. If that percentage should double, 95 to 96% of deaths will be from other causes. The point is that we should have a healthy caution and take sensible precautions concerning the virus, but not panic and shut down our society and economy any longer. The U.S. has a 95% survival rate from the virus. That's cause for hope, not fear.
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit aim2020.com.
Brian Fisher here. It's time for social justice warriors to stop tearing down statues and start tearing down Ivy League universities. Our most racist presidents have been Democrats. A black woman speaks truth to the rioters in Seattle about who's killing blacks. And Chris Wallace wants to know why Trump's rallies are a health problem and protests aren't. Next on Focal Point.
Back to the Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
On Saturday evening, a 3-year-old boy was shot to death sitting in a car with his father, and apparently his father was targeted. And they shot up the car, killed the boy. The father suffered only minor wounds. And this little boy was among the 104 people shot in Chicago. That's right. The number is now up to 104 shot over the Father's Day weekend and 14 killed. And he was one of them, a 3-year-old boy. I don't know when people are going to wake up to the fact that Black Lives Matter is not about the fact that Black Lives Matter. It's about a political agenda because they are silent in the face of the carnage that is going on in Chicago and across this country. But maybe some people in the black community are finally beginning to wake up. Listen to a couple of comments that were made at a press conference calling this tragic killing of this little innocent kid to everyone's attention. Take a listen.
We cannot march about what happened in Minneapolis or in Atlanta without also being concerned about justice. That's right. In the case of Makai James. Yeah. Thank you very much.
My name is Zerlina Smith. I'm a proud Austin homeowner and community resident. I am a single mother of an 11-year-old. As I walk the streets with many people behind me right now, when we knock on doors, when we work with our police department, with the 15th District's caps, not just around this issue, but other issues that you never hear about. When you think about this poor 3-year-old, have the empathy and the compassion to know that it might have been your child. When you think about this 3-year-old whose life was taken unjustly in a moment as we marched on police brutality. Remember, black-on-black crime is the number one killer of black men and women. We never talk about that as black people.
Black-on-black crime is the number one killer of black young men. And we never talk about that in the black community. Well, wait a minute. I thought Black Lives Matter was about black lives mattering. No, we never talk about that because that is not what it's about. And I'll tell you something, folks. You have to be heartless. Heartless to think about this 3-year-old kid, Michaela James, being shot in the back, apparently with a shotgun. And look at an organization that's supposed to be, claims it's about saving black lives, that between all of the black people who have died since George Floyd was killed, and between that killing and the death of Rayshard Brooks, all the black people who have died in black-on-black violence primarily since then, and you haven't heard a peep, not even for a 3-year-old child. Now, what does that tell you? It tells you they could care less. And I've said this before. They could care less. And it's about time these pastors and corporate leaders and these people in positions of cultural influence stop allowing themselves to be extorted and manipulated by an organization that is about nothing good and start trying to figure out how to bring Americans together. Because I guarantee you, any American, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever their backgrounds, male, female, looks at this and goes, this is horrible. What can we do? Well, you're not going to do anything following Black Lives Matter because they don't care about this. It's not the police that are killing young black men. Yeah, they're young black men who die at the hands of police with 3.5 million arrests, about 250 of them on average a year, with about, I think it's about 7 million arrests of Americans of European descent. About 500 a year die. And many of these, of course, are because people actually shoot at the police or try in some way to take a police officer's life. They put their lives in direct mortal danger and they end up dying in the process. That's what most of those constitute. There's only a very, very small percentage of even those numbers of people who end up dying in questionable circumstances. Some may even be wrongful deaths. Those police officers are usually fired, charged. In this hysterical atmosphere we're in, the state of hysteria we're in, I don't think it really matters much whether a police officer's response is justifiable. He's in trouble no matter what. But that's another matter. Look, 14 people killed at 9:52 on Friday. A car pulled up, someone inside opened fire, 34-year-old man was shot in the neck, pronounced dead, 43-year-old man was shot in the back, taken to the hospital, looks like he's going to survive, another 34-year-old man shot in the foot. Around 10:24, 32-year-old man shot multiple times, he was taken to the hospital, pronounced dead. Saturday night, this 3-year-old Michaela James shot and killed riding in a vehicle in what's called the Austin neighborhood of the west side of Chicago. That was approximately 6:30 p.m. An hour later, a 27-year-old man shot and killed at 7:46 p.m. 6:58 p.m. on Saturday night, a man was shot and killed. Another was injured in an argument with a group of individuals. The young man who was killed was 23 years old, shot in the neck, pronounced dead on the scene. Second man suffered a gunshot wound to the arm, survived. 5:10 p.m. on Saturday, two teens fatally shot in an alley. 17-year-old victim sustained a gunshot wound to the back and chest. 16-year-old victim also shot. Both died. And listen to this one. A 13-year-old girl sitting in her home at 8:36 p.m., minding her business, doing nothing to anybody, a bullet came through, killed her dead on the spot. A 16-year-old boy and a 15-year-old boy were also shot in the leg. They survived it. 13-year-old girl, though, was shot in the right side of her neck and died shortly thereafter. I mean, two teenage boys shot, one fatally, early on Monday morning. And the list just goes on and on and on and on. Four of the 14 people killed over the weekend in Chicago were minors doing absolutely nothing. And I'm not saying the adults weren't innocent, but the minors were doing absolutely nothing to anybody. One sitting in her home, 3-year-old kid sitting in a car with his father. And by the way, his father, hero that he is refusing to support or work with or cooperate with the police in trying to identify the person who killed his son. Now, this has just got to stop. It's just got to stop. You know, we need a counter movement to Black Lives Matter, you know, like American Lives Matter, All Lives Matter, Every American Matters, something as a counter movement to bring us together instead of what Black Lives Matter is doing, tearing us apart, and then doing so under the specious claim that it's because police are out hunting down black men. That is a damnable, palpable, provable lie out of the pit of hell. It is not happening. And some of these celebrities running around propagating that mess are responsible for getting people killed. Like this woman at CNN that I mentioned who said, you know, Rayshard Brooks fought back because we found out that if we don't fight back, we die. I mean, I'm a big supporter of the First Amendment, but she might be an exception. Because that kind of crazy stuff that you're spewing into the atmosphere and you're telling young people, that's the kind of stuff that gets people killed. I was talking to my son about this offline. He was on with me. I mean, off the air. He was on with me on Friday. I was talking to him about this. He said he got stopped just a few days ago on his way home. He said he passed a truck that was moving kind of slow, and it was a legal pass. He said, but a cop stopped him because he didn't put on any signals. He just kind of did it suddenly. And the cop, you know what the cop told him? Yeah, slow down. And on about his business, he went. Back in a moment.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
There is within each of us a desire to be a success in life. It is a desire which God placed within us. Too many of us find our efforts towards success frustrated. This need not be the case. Success is indeed within reach of every person. One way to succeed, and by far the easiest, is to never try. Now, that statement may seem a little strange, but if you'll study it for a moment, you will see the validity of it. Never attempt anything, and you will never fail. Success will be automatic, even guaranteed. The world is full of people who never tried. They set their goals so low that they could not miss. They achieved their success early and easy. I knew a man once who was a great success, at least in his own eyes, as a member of his church. He came and joined and never came back until his funeral. He set his goal low and reached it quick and easy. It takes no great effort to succeed when one's goal is low, and a person can pat himself on the back while commending himself for great success. You'd be surprised at the number of people who have followed this easy route to success. But still, another way to be successful is to try half-heartedly. This is, of course, the best route open to those who wish to get out cheap while maintaining their self-respect. They can say, "I tried," and they did do that. They tried. They succeeded in trying. There were those who laughed at Thomas Edison when he began working toward developing an electric light. They told Edison that it couldn't be done because they had already tried it, and they had. And for the most part, they were well-respected men in their profession and well-educated. But they laughed at Edison. But Edison wasn't satisfied with a half-hearted effort. He set his goal a little higher. Now, the third route toward success is to be serious. It was said once by John Mark concerning Jesus that when someone made a certain remark to the Galilean that he, quote, paid no attention to them. What a grand statement. What a terrific statement. When those about him were trying to get Jesus to lower his goals, his ideals, his ambitions, he paid no attention to them. The person who is serious about success will pay no attention to the prophets of doom. Now, this path toward success isn't easy and is often very disappointing. It is difficult sometimes to keep our goals high and not listen to the words of the world. People laughed at Edison, called him a fool for trying seriously. But they don't laugh at him now when they flip the light switch. People also laughed at Christ, but only foolish people laugh at him today. The all-important question is this: what do we mean by success? Success by whose standards? God is the final judge over our success, and often we may be a failure in everyone else's eyes except His. When a person has done the best he can do and remained true to the best he has known, then in God's eyes, he is a success. That's the reason I say that success is within reach of everyone, even you.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
Every American matters. Every life matters. Every individual matters. All lives matter. Something. There's got to be something that actually cares about the lives of people that is actually dedicated to trying to help address this, as opposed to this pontificating and posturing about too many guns. You know what the big problem is in England, where they've got severe gun restrictions? Knife murders. There is an epidemic of knife murders in London. Murdering is not in the instrument, it's in the heart. Now, just as an experiment, because I get so caught up in the national news that I sometimes don't follow our local news as closely as I probably should, but I just as a experiment, just, you know, murder in local areas. And I open up the internet, and immediately, Sunday night, two black men killed in a double murder, double homicide. And I look at the columns beside that, the other columns, and man fatally wounded in Chesapeake, Virginia, where I used to live. Now, that's without doing any research, just opening it up, and I found three murders, all black men, right here in the area of Hampton Roads. This is happening all over the country. And it's why about 7,000 black men lose their lives in inner city violence. I mean, what's going on in Chicago is a war zone. 104 people shot, 14 dead, including four kids. That's a war zone, folks. That's what happens in war zones. Something's got to give. Something's got to give. And right now, people are so mesmerized by Black Lives Matter and intimidated by it. You know, everybody's rushing to, oh, we have to make Juneteenth the national holiday. No, we don't. No, we don't. Well, Bishop, how could you be against? Look, you know, I wish some of these people would read a history book. I've heard news reporters say, June, it took them 2 years to find out they've been set free. Well, that's the dumbest things I've ever heard somebody who's supposed to be an intelligent, educated person say. Look, Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation on January 1st of 1863. It had virtually no effect because it only applied to the Confederate states, and the Union had no ability whatsoever to enforce it. So it was, in a sense, a Pyrrhic thing, a Pyrrhic statement. It was a symbolic statement. It had absolutely no impact whatsoever, except maybe if slaves heard about it, that might give them, embolden them to try to escape or something like that. But other than that, there were no slaves freed by the Emancipation Proclamation for all practical purposes. And by the way, it didn't apply to Maryland or Kentucky, both states having slaves, but remained in the Union. And Abraham Lincoln did not want to upset them because he needed every state on the Union side he could keep. And so it didn't even apply to the two states that remained in the Union and had slaves. So when this general arrived in Galveston, Texas in June of 1865, say 2 years after, took them to, that's dumb, because slaves weren't freed by the Emancipation Proclamation. And I'm not saying it was a bad thing to do. It was smart strategically and good symbolically, but as a practical matter, it had no impact. Do you know what ended slavery? It was when General Lee surrendered to Ulysses S. Grant at the Appomattox Courthouse on April 9th of 1865. That's when slavery ended. Now, the fact that it took 2 months for people in Texas, in that part of Texas, to find out is another matter. But the word went out all over the land very, very quickly. And exactly why it took so long for it to finally get down to Texas, I don't know. But it went out across the land very quickly. And so the idea that when the people in Galveston, Texas, found out it's a national holiday because that's when the slaves were freed is preposterous. Slavery ended on April 9th, 1865, when the Confederacy surrendered. But fine, if you don't want to celebrate that, because obviously, again, the Civil War was a dark day in American history. I mean, so you don't want to celebrate that. How about this? Why not celebrate the ratification of the 13th Amendment, which happened in December of 1865? Why not celebrate that, which forever constitutionally ended involuntary servitude? If you want to celebrate something, you want to celebrate something that can unify the nation around something that applied to all Americans, black Americans, but all Americans, and that all Americans were part of, rather than this constant effort these days of segregation. I thought the whole point was to get away from segregation. And now the whole point seems to be continually, no, we need to set aside. We Black people have to be treated differently, separately. They have to be cordoned off. I'm tired of that. I want symbols and celebrations that bring us together as a nation. How about that? How about the ratification of the 13th Amendment? If you don't like celebrating the end of the Civil War, at least it was the beginning of the nation reuniting. Or the passage of the 13th Amendment, which happened before the Civil War ended. That happened in January of 1865, but it wasn't ratified until December, which was after the Civil War was over. I think that's a better thing to celebrate, because then it actually became law. But I'm not against Juneteenth. I'm not trying to denigrate it. All I'm saying is Juneteenth is a Texas thing. It's not a national holiday. I don't think it belongs in that pantheon. But of course, in order to, forgive me for saying that this way, folks, but this is the way it strikes me. In order to calm the natives, let's do whatever we've got to do. And the pandering begins, even if it doesn't make a bit of sense. You know, no, I'm in favor of making September American History Month, because that's when the Constitution was passed at the Continental Congress. And I think that is something that we all ought to begin to celebrate, to begin to educate our people again about American history, because right now it has been so twisted and distorted and perverted and messed up that we've raised up a whole generation that hates our country because they haven't been taught the nobility of our country and the glories of our country and the heroes of our country and the courage and the valor and the integrity of our people. You know, and may I say this, and I know this is going to strike some people's ears the wrong way, maybe not you all who are listening, but some people it would strike the wrong way. You know, Southerners were still Americans, you know. They were still Americans. As I've said before, I think they were on the wrong side of history. I think they and not all of them were fighting for slavery. That's a fact. Not all of them were fighting. In fact, probably not most of them were, because most of them weren't slave owners. It didn't have any effect on them. In fact, if anything, it was a competition for labor. Slavery was a competition for people who had no money. It was a competition for labor. So many of, and I'm not saying nobody fought for slavery and nobody was pro-slavery. Of course, there were people who were pro-slavery. But for many of them, it was just a matter of fighting for their state, to which they felt they owed their first loyalty. But they were still Americans. And at the end of the Civil War, we had to come back together as Americans. And thank God they had the sense, Southerners and Northerners had the sense to understand that. I'm convinced in some ways, even though we fought a terribly bloody Civil War that lost over 600,000 American lives, I'm convinced that they were smarter than we are today. Because they at least came to understand we've got to knit the country back together. We've got people in our country now who seem hell-bent on tearing us apart. Okay, folks, I'm going to take your calls when I come back. 888-589-8840 is the number. Back in a moment.
This is Chris Katulka of the Friends of Israel Today radio program, and I want to encourage you to join us this weekend. We're going to be continuing our Encountering Jesus series. We're going to be looking at the life of Jesus as he ministered one-on-one to individuals. And this week, it's the woman at the well. We're going to see the power of Christ's forgiveness, his reconciliation, how he invites us to worship in spirit and in truth. You can listen on this station or connect with us at foiradio.org.
In the audiobook, The God You Thought You Knew, apologist Alex McFarland exposes 10 common myths about Christianity.
Each of these myths contain a grain of truth, yet also involve a level of deception that blurs the vision of what God intends for our lives.
The God You Thought You Knew is available at the American Family Association store. Visit afastore.net.
The following is not an actor, but a real-life story from Trinity Debt Management.
I was finishing undergrad and got credit cards because I couldn't work full-time. So that started the credit card journey for me.
If you're in debt and you need help, call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813.
And then when I got married, we combined our credit card debt and it became impossible to pay off on our own. At that point, I was like, I don't know where to turn. And then I found Trinity.
Trinity will consolidate your accounts into one easy-to-manage monthly payment, reduce your interest, and possibly improve your credit score. You'll save thousands.
I initially was scared to call, and immediately I felt relief. I mean, in a matter of 3 years, we've already paid down $20,000 in credit card debt, which is huge.
Call Trinity at 1-800-788-1813. That's 1-800-788-1813.
Well, these are certainly tough, tough times, aren't they? Hi, it's Michael Woolworth with Bible League International, engaging the world with God's Word for more than 80 years at only $5 a Bible. You know, I'm grateful that God has given Bible League a platform for more than eight decades to address the other pandemic, and that's the shortage of Bibles all over the world in places like Asia, Africa, the Middle East, and Latin America. In fact, at Bible League, we determine that as few as one Christian in 10 has a Bible. What's that mean? That during this pandemic, many evangelical Christians elsewhere in the world cannot open their Bible and be reminded of God's promises, like 1 Peter 5:7, cast your cares on Him, for He cares for you. But you know, during this time of sheltering in place, we can shelter in grace. Learn how you can be a blessing to believers around the world praying for a Bible by visiting sendbiblesnow.org. That's sendbiblesnow.org, or by calling Bible League at 800-YES-WORD, 800-YES-WORD.
Back to The Awakening with Bishop E.W. Jackson on American Family Radio.
The number is 888-589-8840. You know, folks, Marxism and communism has never been interested in solving problems as it comes into its revolution. They're only interested in exploiting problems. Never let a good crisis go to waste. And I believe that Marxism and communism are behind this whole Black Lives Matter movement. And they're much more interested in exploiting the problem than they are in solving a problem. Because if you really want to solve the problem, it's going to take all Americans working together with mutual goodwill, trying to save the lives of our young people, get them a decent education, give them the experience of hope that people like Herschel Walker and his son and I and my son and so many others around this country who happen to be Americans of African descent that we have. This love that we have for our country, this respect, this honor that we have for our country, begin to propagate that so that we can come together as Americans and continue to work on improving our country and making our country the very best place to live that you can have on earth, because that's what we all ought to want. But that's not what the left wants. That is not what they want. They want to deconstruct America so they can remake it after their own totalitarian, wicked imaginations into some sort of communist state. That's what they really want. And here again, if you don't believe me, just look at the autonomous zone, because that's exactly what that is. Signs up saying only Black and Native Americans can work in this, can benefit from this garden. White people may work in it and serve in it, but they may not eat of it. What is that? That's the future for the country? And while in the meantime, while they're doing that stupid mess out there, you got kids dying like flies and they have nothing to say about it. They have it's of no interest to them, because that's not the kind of crisis they can exploit. But they can exploit something that involves the police. Yeah, because we can make the police the villains and show how we're going to liberate you from their terrible oppression, when the real oppression is happening right under our noses in inner cities across this country every single day. 104 shot and 14 murdered in Chicago alone this past weekend. Father's Day weekend. How ironic. Because that's the major problem, isn't it? The fact that the fathers aren't there. My sermon on Sunday, by the way, you can catch it on Facebook. My sermon on Sunday was entitled, Where Are the Fathers? Because if you had fathers taking their rightful responsibility in these communities, I guarantee you'd have a whole lot less of this chaos than you've got right now. Okay, folks, I apologize for ranting a little bit here, but this stuff just really gets all over me. And I'm just tired of seeing people manipulated by these false so-called organizations that are interested in doing nothing but propping themselves up and their leftist buddies up for more power and control and money and the fundamental transformation of our country. That's all it's about. It's not about helping people at all. It's about controlling everything and everybody. Okay, with that, let me get to your calls. Let's go to Larry in Tennessee. Larry, welcome.
Hello, cuz. How you doing?
I'm doing great, cuz. How you doing?
Hey, I'm going to tell you what, Bishop. I've had an ongoing game with anybody. They can throw a dart at a world map and give me a little while, and I'll find a relation there. My family has all 36 shades of brown. And we just lost my daughter-in-law's father. He was born in Mexico City. I have South African relatives that are a very, very light shade and a very, very dark shade. Mm-hmm. And I want anybody to look up the lightest colored people on the face of the earth and see where they are from. The largest population of albinos in Tanzania, Africa. God bless you. Love
you. God bless you, Larry. God bless you. I love you too, brother. Thank you so much. You know, Acts 17:26 says that God has made from one blood all nations of men to dwell on all the face of the earth. One blood. That means ultimately we all come from the same source, don't we? We all come from Almighty God, and we're all descendants of Adam and Eve. But here again, you've got to have a biblical worldview to understand that. And right now, the people who seem to be influencing the culture and the country, they don't have a clue about that. For them, skin color is their obsession, and it's a poison that is really destroying the fabric and culture of our country, and it's got to be arrested. But thank you for the call. Let's go to Eugene, Illinois. Eugene, welcome.
Hey, Bishop. God bless you, brother.
God bless you.
I was just calling. I am a descendant of General Robert E. Lee.
Ah.
And I was actually, growing up, I was a student of the Civil War. It fascinated me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, where is it when the Union actually asked Robert E. Lee to lead his army, and he stated, because he was against slavery, but he would not fight against the men that he trained?
Well, he was another one, very much like others, who felt a loyalty to his own home state. You know, a lot of people don't know this. I'm a student of the Civil War myself. I mean, I'm not an expert on the Civil War, but I have studied it. And the interesting thing is a lot of these guys who fought each other knew each other because they'd been to West Point together. They served in the Mexican-American War together. They served in the military together. And they knew each other. They weren't enemies. They were friends.
Some of them were some brothers. They were so split.
I know.
It split so many people. I used to have, wasn't trading cards, but it was a deck of cards about the Civil War. And I mean, I read those things front to back. I think my dad might have encouraged me. He was a preacher, a godly man, took me to more black churches growing up than I could probably imagine. And he, really drove that into me that we were all equal under God's eyes. We all bleed the same.
Amen. Amen.
And so I agree with you. This hatred that is tearing us apart, stand up. And if you want to get behind a movement that matters, then get behind the sex slavery that's going on in this world.
How about that? Because slavery is happening right now. It's happening through sex trafficking. Mauritania, for example, is being investigated for having an underground slave movement that is being winked at by the government of Mauritania. So slavery is happening on the planet right now. It's not a matter of skin color. It's a matter of the human heart. So, Eugene, thank you so much. And look, one of the things I've learned in studying the Civil War is, here again, I think that the Confederacy is on the wrong side of history overall, but they were all human beings just trying to do what they thought was right. And why we've got to have this hatred as if they were walking the earth today, trying to enslave people today, is just, I mean, to me, it's demonic. It really is demonic. And people can get caught all up in that. And as far as I'm concerned, they can become virtually mentally ill with this stuff instead of just letting it go and just realizing, look, I've got a present to build and a future to build. And I want to focus on that instead of focusing on, you know, nitpicking about the past and what somebody's ancestors did to my ancestors and all of that. I mean, that to me is that borders on the psychotic. I'm serious. It really does. But thank you for the call, Eugene. Appreciate it. Let's go to Ed in Mississippi. Ed, welcome.
Hey, Bishop. God bless you. I listen to you try to every day, sir. And I thank you for your service to your country. And I just have a couple questions right quick, and then I'm going to hang up and listen to you. What is it going to take for pastors to stand behind the pulpit and preach against this BLM movement and tell the truth about it, about what it stands for, the Marxist, socialist, even tearing down our statues and stuff like that? And I just want to get your opinion on that. What's it going to take for white and black pastors to stand up and tell the truth about what's really going on in our country? Thank you, sir. And I'll
Thank you, Ed. I can tell you that in a one-word answer: courage. Because the sad fact is, and we know that's not true for all, and I'm not saying all, but many, too many of our pastors suffer from the malady of cowardice. They don't want to upset anybody. They don't want anybody to say anything bad about them. They don't want anybody to dislike them. And so rather than running the risk of offending others, they'd rather offend God. So that's the problem. Lord, pour out your spirit on them, on all of us, that we might have the courage to do what you told Jeremiah to do. Do not be afraid of their faces, but you say all that I put in your mouth. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Temple in Virginia. Welcome.
Hey, Bishop. It's great to hear you and talk to you today. I just want to make some comments. First of all, these communist socialists, they're using prejudice and those things you can see and tangibly touch as the motivation to promote communism because, communism and socialism grow in a chaotic environment. That's how they come about. That's how Mao promoted it. And what's funny is they use the same venue because that's exactly what Adolf Hitler used in 1932 Germany after World War One, that chaotic environment and the bad economy to put himself in. So they're using the same tactics they've been using forever. The other thing I'd like to bring to task is none of these people that are promoting this, you know, socialist communism as a utopian paradise, have ever lived in that environment. You know, none of these people went to, you know, China, came back and said, I have seen the light, I've been to the promised land, we don't need to move to China. Yep. If you notice, I think they've kind of come here, and none of these people are packing their bags and moving somewhere else.
Temple, that's going to do it. Temple, thank you so much for the call. We've got to go, but look, you made a great point. I appreciate it. Jace, I can't get to you, but let me say an answer to your question. What do you say to people who say you're wrong about BLM? Tell them to check out the website. See what they really stand for. And you'll see a whole lot of emphasis on deconstructing the nuclear family and transgenderism and all this stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with trying to save black lives, because that's not what they're about. Back tomorrow. But in the meantime, folks, remember, I got to remember where I am with my bumper music. We cannot be defeated if we will not quit, because we are on God's side.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.